and welcome to the official episode one of this new generation of Jumpcast. I'm Simon Whitlock, and joining me is, well, both my lovely co-hosts, Alex Gilson. Hello, how are you doing?
Hello, I'm wonderful, thank you. Glad to be back. Glad they haven't fired us yet.
It's only a matter of time before we're all found out, don't worry. And Charlotte Harrison, how are you?
Good, thank you. Well, yeah, thrilled to be back. Exactly that.
Well, we've had a little bit of time between actually this recording and our pilot recording to kind of pull the curtain back a little bit on how things work. So what have you guys been, what's caught your eyes in the time between recordings? Alex, what's been on your radar?
Well, I actually watched Robert Eggers's The Witch. The Vavitch.
Nice.
I assume how people pronounce it.
Get it right, yeah.
From 2015. And,
are you living deliciously now?
It's very strange. Yes! Oh my god, that is possibly one of the best lines to ever be spoken in a film, like, ever. I love it. I love it so much. But Anya Taylor-Joy was great as well.
Oh, yeah. She's
interesting,
so
accents.
Yeah, I think to be, to be fair, yeah. And as, Ralph Ineson, who is in The Green Knight, which we still can't
don't
watch.
Do not mention her name here. Makes me sad.
Oh, we need to stay strong. One fine day, we'll be with it.
It will come. Patience will be the virtue in that situation.
Exactly. It'll be 1 year thence and it will come. but anyway. so that's cool. So big fan, I'm guessing, of the Vavitch.
I did enjoy it, yeah. But like I said, incredibly weird. It took me a while to kind of mull over my thoughts on it, but yeah, very solid.
Excellent. And have you managed to catch The Lighthouse?
No, I haven't. It's next on the list in terms of Robert Eggers films. So
excellent.
So I'll definitely be getting on that.
Nice, yeah, because we've got the Northman coming next year, which sounds, I mean, very intense by the synopsis and everything else that's come out of it so far. So, man, you got something to look forward to, and then I'm sure we all do once 2022 rolls around. That's great though. Charlotte, what about yourself? Have you caught anything exciting, fun, or otherwise in the last week?
I did Sundance last week, and I saw 13 films. Which was amazing. And Alex and I saw a couple of them together, actually. I'd say I'll go for it. They were all hits I saw last week. I didn't hate anything.
Nice.
Even Cryptozoo.
Didn't hate. It stayed with me, and I've thought about it a lot since, so I need to give it credit.
Yeah. So have I. I actually had a conversation with somebody in work about it because I was still so perplexed over my thoughts on it.
How do we describe Cryptozoo for those who don't know what we're talking about?
Do I need to put my fingers in my ears and just go la la la? For
like no, we're not gonna spoil it.
I mean, it wouldn't be. We wouldn't go into spoiler territory.
No, that's fine.
How do you explain Cryptozoo?
Someone described it to me as the quote they said was, "I don't partake in substances, but if I did, I would take it for that film," and I can see why.
Oh.
Yeah, very much. It's incredibly psychedelic, isn't it? It's an adult animated film, and it's kind of set in like a world where humans live alongside what are known as cryptids, which is kind of like, you know, Bigfoot and Pegasus and all of these mythical beings. And they're kind of ostracized by the public, and there are people who kind of fight for them
and
fight for their freedom.
This is 1960s America, so there's kind of a suggestion about war and Nixon playing a part in things.
Yeah, very much so. And then obviously, hence the title, Cryptozoo, there's this kind of sanctuary that the main character of the film is kind of trying to build up for all of these cryptids, and it kind of goes from there. I will admit, like, the animation stuff is just insane. Like, it is incredible. And apparently it took them four years to animate the entire thing. Because you can tell, because each shot is basically a work of art. But yeah, I'm not so sure about everything else about it. But yeah, I like Charlotte said, didn't hate it.
Okay. Well, that's one to keep an eye out for, I guess. I've just got incredible FOMO because I'm really gutted I didn't get to catch up with you guys and enjoy Sundance myself. So, but I'm glad that you had a really good time. And good to hear that there were no misses there of all 13s. So that's very promising for the year ahead.
Yeah,
and maybe
definitely.
Even
I'd say Zola, which I think we'll talk about in a couple of weeks, was phenomenal. I loved it a lot. Pleasure was kind of similar,
nice.
But horrific. In the sense that I could never watch it again. It was so well done, but I won't watch Pleasure again.
I would also say Together as well. Hopefully that's going to get a UK
Ed
release.
Ed Helms in a dramatic
point,
role
yeah,
was so,
film.
So charming.
Nice. Oh my gosh. Okay, my watch list has just gotten... Well, that's three more added to the list. My God. I mean, but yes, as you say, Zola, it will be covered by us in a future episode. So watch this space, film fans. Oh, that felt wrong saying that. Anyway. we should probably get started into, well, let's start with our appetizer, if you will, our starter. We're going to be discussing the week's biggest news stories in the world of film, and I think we can't start anywhere else but the story which has been dominating the film press and social media for at least a week now. Scarlett Johansson coming out guns blazing against the House of Mouse.
Yeah, very much so. And also not kind of not just her as well, there's been other names kind of thrown into the mix in terms of films that they've been in and kind of facing up to the studios that released those films too. Twitter seems to be dubbing them the Sue Squad.
I mean, it kind of works, I guess. And yeah, there's been a lot of discussion on both sides of the argument in regards to Scarlett Johansson and Disney. How do you guys feel about this developing situation? What are your takeaways from all of this so far?
So from what I can gather, she's suing them because a lot of her compensation for box office performance, right? The idea that it was a limited release because it spread across Disney Plus, it was a reduced amount of money for her. It kind of sounds like she's asking for what she's entitled to.
Yeah, I think the estimations were that she'd lost out on about $50 million.
Whoa, okay.
Yikes. I mean...
Which is a lot of moolah. lot of moolah.
That's a lot of cheddar. I mean, wow. Yeah, I like you say, Charlotte, I'm on board with that. Like, it's... Without getting into, you know, people's individual politics and things like that, like, Disney have... Well, for fear of getting into litigation talk, you know, Disney have done something which they shouldn't have done, essentially, in terms of contracts, as far as like a layman sees it. But Alex, do you stand on this?
I mean, I'm very much still on the fence about it. It's quite interesting. I wish that it could have stayed private. I think that's the bottom line for me. Obviously, that's through no fault of Scarlett Johansson's. I don't imagine she was the person who went to the press and was like, oh, I'm suing Disney, because why would she do that?
FYI, guys.
There must have been somebody close to her who knew the scoop. Why would you do that? You just wouldn't do that, especially. But yeah, I just feel like it's two massively rich parties trying to... Well, they're basically just fighting over money, aren't they? And it's like, they're a bigger fish to fry these days. No, and you know, but like you guys say, you know, she is just asking for what she is rightfully on in terms of her contract, which we don't really know exactly what the fine print is of this contract. We haven't seen it. We probably won't see it.
Yeah.
And obviously, it's not very courteous of Disney to not kind of keep her up on what the plans were for the release of Black Widow.
I do wonder if different if it had been a different member of, hypothetically, the Marvel cast. Because Scarlett Johansson, she's had to fight for like the merchandise for Black Widow. Her treatment within the films has been so varied. Like, she finally got her own platform, 10 years after her first appearance? And also, she has said things in the past. We don't need to go on it too much in terms of her role choices.
No.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, definitely that. I would also say that, and I don't want to sound like I'm defending Disney here, because, you know, it is just another big conglomerate company that's got loads and loads of money. But from their point of view, and I know that this is because obviously they wanted to make more money, but the idea of Disney Plus Premier Access, as well as to make money, is also to help, especially in the current situation, films get to a wider audience, which, from my perspective, if more eyes can watch a film, especially a film like Black Widow, you know, where it's, like you said, Charlotte, a film where Scarlett Johansson's finally getting the limelight properly 10 years after, she's getting a little bit of justice in that sense. And, you know, the more people that watch that, the better. And I just feel like it's a bit disingenuous from Scarlett Johansson's side, because there are still people who don't feel comfortable enough to go to the cinema currently because of the situation. And Premier Access is giving them the chance to still watch the film. And it just, yeah, I don't know. That's probably my only downside of the whole situation from my point of view.
I think
because
it's a very good
kind of alienates, you know, a good chunk of viewership. Like, it made what, $60 million in its opening weekend on Disney Plus. That's
65, something like that. Yeah, yeah.
That's like what, 60,000 households or something like that. You know, it's a lot of people that you kind of just say, just moving to the side and saying, well, you don't count, kind of thing. But it could have all been dealt with a lot better, I think. I'm rambling now.
No, I think generally I agree, though. I do think that, yeah, like you say before, it shouldn't really be something which should be disputed and discussed massively in the public. And maybe we're not helping things by talking about it now. But speaking of making things worse by continuing to talk about it, Matt Damon has is a compulsive just explainer and over-explainer. Thank you. Thank you very much. So this is a bizarre story which came out this week, or just over the weekend, where Matt Damon seems to have learned the value of words and then decided that, no, he wasn't actually this is such a bizarre story. So basically, he had basically his daughter wrote him a lengthy essay on why certain slurs shouldn't be spoken. Guys, help me out here.
First of all, if you need your child to write you a lengthy essay on why not saying slurs, why you shouldn't say slurs, then you're already in a really bad light. But then also going on to brag about the fact that you're not saying them anymore. It could have been, Matt Damon literally could have said, you know, I said it yesterday, but I'm not saying it anymore. Like, and that makes me the winner. I am doing God's work here by not saying the F slur. Oh,
and that's progress.
You know what, Matt Damon, if you're listening, it costs nothing to stay silent.
So he's got three daughters. They're 15,
just reminded of that
12
lyric.
And 10. Which lyric?
I
was thinking of Bo Burnham's Inside, the comedy. So maybe I should just shut the up.
So we're to assume that the 15-year-old daughter... It would be very funny if it was the 10-year-old that had written the letter.
Yeah, we're going to go for presume 15.
But we're to assume that the 15...
Yeah, I don't know what he wanted
it's
to
so
achieve
funny because
by
somebody...
Then.
No, he just... It's funny because I'm pretty sure, or at least I saw, somebody brought a tweet up from like 5-6 years ago where Matt Damon was in an interview and he started complaining to the interviewer that apparently journalists now weaponize people's interviews, especially actors' interviews, and they pick and choose what kind of things they say. If people say that something wrong, then they'll take that and they'll make it the headline and they'll... Which, I mean, is the point of journalism, right? But, but yeah, so it's just putting that next to what he said is just so hilarious, because he basically, became the very thing he swore to destroy.
Yeah, it is really unfair to be reported on the things you've said. I mean, that's really...
Yes, so unfair. I
saw this great tweet that said that a Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, they can't both succeed at the same time. One of them must be going through a high while one goes through a low. And obviously, Ben's recreating the Blair and Naughties with Jennifer Lopez.
Yeah, that is very true. My gosh, Matt Damon down in the dumps.
Oh my word.
Again, if you're listening, Matt Damon, you want to come on Jumpcast and say your name. We're open. We're open to it. We're open to a good long discussion.
Well, the last Duel's coming out in November, so you know, maybe we can
do a joint promotion of the film.
Bill Water's next month, isn't it?
Oh, Stillwater as well.
Stillwater. Yeah. Oh my god, that's synergy, baby.
It might be this month, yeah. It could be. Yeah, right, Matt Damon. Word. This is an open letter from me, Charlotte, and Simon to join us on Jumpcast. Do with that what you will.
It would be a pleasure to have you, I'm sure. Anyway.
After we've just been shit talking him for 10 minutes. Yeah.
Okay, as easy as it is to continue, shall we move on to the next story? We
probably should, yeah.
So, on much lighter notes, and actually in, going into future productions, I don't know if you guys were aware, but there was going to be an animated Flash Gordon movie. It's now been changed to be a live-action one, and we've got Taika Waititi is definitely going to be penning it.
I just want to say before we go into this very quickly, in the show notes for this episode, you've wrote new Flash Gordon movie, but in between Flash and Gordon, you put in the middle. Obviously, as a reference to that, but I didn't realise. So I thought that you were talking about the new Flash movie. And that apparently there is going to be a Commissioner Gordon movie that Taika Waititi was on to write. So I got so confused. But I know what you're talking about now.
Oh, God. I'll have to clear up my show notes, I think, just to make
I got the reference, so that's,
imagine that.
1 out of 2.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, that's at least one, yeah.
I say we just send up like one of those like websites that just make up rumours about films coming out. That'd be our... That'd be our...
That's a good idea for a feature at the end of an episode. We should just make up fake movies.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, I'm really excited for this. I dig the old 80s version of Flash Gordon. I'm really looking forward to see what Taika Waititi brings to it. Where do you guys stand with it? Are you looking forward? Are you... pessimistic? Are you completely indifferent? Charlotte, where do you come
from? I'd go yes for the writing. Obviously, Taika Waititi, amazing. I would say, though, I almost am a bit disappointed it's live action, because I think animated gives it so many possibilities in terms of what it does. Mm. I read this article a few months back about how a lot of book adaptations should actually be animated instead of live action, because there's some stuff, in terms of like fantasy and sci-fi, you just can't achieve in cinema. I do sort of wonder what the animated version would have been like, but you know, here for it still.
Yes, it's interesting. I mean, if we're to believe that maybe Taika Waititi might take on the directing role as well, or maybe a bit more of a bit bigger creative role than just the writing, then if there's anybody who is up for the job, it's probably him.
Mm. Agreed.
Yeah. No, I'd agree with that. I think, because it's such a weird and wonderful story and world and everything else, if anyone's going to get their head around it, it's going to be the guy who made Thor Ragnarok.
Exactly.
But we have to look forward and see how that looks and how that pans out. In other big upcoming news, I mean, this is one for which I am very excited, is we have got the comeback of all comebacks. Brendan Fraser is back, baby. He's just literally before we recorded, about an hour before, it was announced that he's going to be in the new Scorsese movie, Killers of the Flower Moon.
Forget Hot Girl Summer 2022. It is Brendan Fraser Summer 2022. That is where we're going.
Long deserved. Long deserved.
I am here for it.
Very much so. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Very, very happy for him.
I say he's got a few other big projects coming as well. And oh my god, like it's yeah, like you guys say, far, far, far more deserving than a lot of comebacks that we've seen in recent years. Cough, Gibson, cough. But but yeah, I mean, if this, you know, if we're getting into wild speculation and hope and hype, if this somehow leads to the Mummy 4, you know, I'm just saying, putting that out.
I'm down. I'm down for that.
Oh my god! If I imagine, imagine. Oh goodness me!
I love that.
But oh yeah, I mean, and well, to round off at least my little snippets of film news. Speaking of big exciting comebacks, we've got potentially. Well, it sounds like it's filming now. A new David Cronenberg, Viggo Mortensen collab. It's filming in Greece, apparently. So we've had Eastern Promises, we've had A History of Violence. I think he was in The Dangerous Method. Might be wrong. Memory is escaping me. And now we've got Crimes of the Future, I believe it's called. Yeah, lay it on me. I'm ready to go. Where are you guys at with this? Again, indifferent, excited, trepidatious?
Well, this is where I have to admit that I've never seen a David Cronenberg movie.
Oh, damn.
Aha. One more for the big list.
One more for the big list. Exactly. I'm so sorry, guys. I'm such a disappointment.
No, not at all.
No, I'm... but yeah, no. I mean, I love Viggo Mortensen.
I haven't thought about him since Green Book.
I'll take it.
I've realised. Green Book was his last sort of big release, wasn't it?
Oh.
Apart from Falling, which I think... Did he write that and direct it?
I believe he did. I might be wrong. Listeners, feel free to correct us on that one. But yeah, I think you're right, Charlotte.
Yeah, he wrote and directed it. But Green Book, speaking of people saying things they shouldn't, during PR tours, I feel like he did a couple of clangers.
Yeah, yeah,
probably
I agree.
Did. It seems like the perfect time for something to just slip out.
Yeah, I mean... Oh god, but yeah, the less said about Green Book, best picture winner.
Yeah, the Oscar winning Green Book.
And let's continue the Oscar winning best picture of the year, better than Black Panther.
We really are in the bad place, aren't we?
anyway no. Okay guys, I don't know about you, but I've seen so many trailers this last week.
Yeah, I have seen so many.
We have eaten well.
More trailers than a caravan park. We're dining. I am stuffed, positively stuffed. So you know what? We might as well dig down into this. I'm going to ask what's been the one that's caught your attention the most. Alex, let's start with you. What's been your big exciting trailer discovery?
I'm going to do it. I'm going to say it. House of Gucci.
Has to be
1,000%. It looks very good. Of course, Ridley Scott has got two films coming out the back end of this year.
My word.
Obviously, The Last Duel, which is coming out sort of later. And we've got House of Gucci, which boasts a cast of wonderful people. You've got Salma Hayek, Al Pacino, you've got Adam Driver, and Lady Gaga, of course. Lady Gaga in her, I think it was her first film role since A Star Is Born, back a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Exciting. I watched the trailer. It looks great. They all sound wonderful. Lady Gaga is gonna kill it. I'm so excited.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Quite literally, yeah, given the trailer. I think it's given that away anyway.
didn't put two and two together on that one, but yeah, there we have it. Man. When it falls into place, it falls into place.
I mean, it works. I'm here for it. I mean, House of Gucci does look fantastic. Charlotte, what about yourself? What's been your most exciting? What's got your hype levels into overdrive off the back of this week?
I guess I'll go for Cinderella because I suddenly announced it to the two of you. It dropped about an hour ago. The new Amazon Prime Cinderella, which looks interesting.
That's definitely one word for it.
To be honest, so the trailer starts off, we talked, Alex mentioned the same thing I spotted, the dresses by Ella. That's how the trailer starts, and it sets up of like moderny knowing tone, which can go one of two ways. And then they play Somebody to Love by Queen, and as we all know, Ella Enchanted did it so well, we don't need to do it again.
I say, invoke Ella Enchanted at your peril.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, definitely.
But that's and, coming well, on the 3rd
we should
of
say
September,
before 3rd of September. And if you haven't watched this trailer yet, and you know you are of a sensitive disposition, we should give a cordon warning.
I knew where you were going as soon as you started. I loved it.
This has been rated C for cordon.
Literally made to say exactly the same thing. But not to worry, because there are two more favourable comedians stood next to him in the same shot that might soften the blow a little bit. So, but yeah,
we'll
as Simon said,
surprise.
Go but, with your own peril.
I'd agree with that. Though Cinderella does look pretty fun, and yeah, that bear that in mind. Though I think
how
my,
about you, Simon?
Good question. I think my one. I mean, there are so many interesting films coming out, but the one which really caught my attention has to be Lamb. My God, what a film that looks already! And I, you know what, you had me at Noomi Rapace being a farmer. I love creepy folklore stuff, and then out of nowhere, Lamb Baby. I mean,
and not just any old lamb baby, because you know, lamb is a baby sheep. We're talking baby human.
We're
with
talking
a lamb's head.
The baby from Eraserhead, all grown up. Like, but no, oh my God, it looks surreal. It looks kind of sweet, and it looks very visually interesting. At the moment, there's not a UK release for that, but in the US at least, that's going to be coming out in October.
Nice.
Sheep.
Oof.
Lamb. Sheep.
That went down just nice. About as well as a lamb.
It was a bit woolly, yeah.
In my house back in the day. Yeah.
I mean, okay, well, fine. I guess we're on that bombshell. That was trailer talk. And now a word from our patrons.
Well, not actually our patrons, but we are going to give a word for them.
Well, thereabouts.
And the words being my name.
All of this would not be possible without our wonderful patrons. Jump Cut Online has a Patreon, and you can go to it at patreon.com/jumpcut_online. And every person who subscribes to our Patreon helps with Jump Cut and helps for Jump Cut to pay more writers to write for the website. There's one thing that Jump Cut absolutely prides itself in is paying all of their writers. And there are loads of different tiers, and they're all Ryan Gosling themed. What more would you want? Pop Ryan Gosling. Is any Ryan Gosling. So go and check that out. We appreciate all of the people who are patrons, and we've got to give a shout out to all of our current patrons, which include Chris Wilson, In On Films, Robert Denny, Daryl Griffiths, Sam Luck, Orla Smith, Peter Hodgkins, Andy Meakin, Fabiana Rosas, Hamish Calvert, Martin Richmond, and Manuel Bento. Thank you so much for your patronage. And as I said, if you want to go and find out more, you can go to Jump Cut's Patreon at patreon.com/jumpcut_online.
We should get rolling straight into our main event, or should I say the main event, that is the Suicide Squad. You know, as they say, add the, it sounds cooler. So let's get people warmed up a little bit with the official synopsis of the Suicide Squad. So this is what they've said. They say, "Welcome to Hell, aka Belle Reve, the prison with the highest mortality rate in the US of A. where the worst supervillains are kept and where they will do anything to get out. Even join the super secret, super shady Task Force X. Today's Do Us Die assignment? Assemble a collection of cons, including Bloodsport, Peacemaker, Captain Boomerang, Ratcatcher 2, Savant, King Shark, Blackguard, Javelin, and everyone's favourite psycho, Harley Quinn. Then arm them heavily and drop them, literally, on the remote, enemy-infused island of Corto Maltese. Guys, that's the Suicide Squad. Now let's hear the Jumpcast review. You know what? Let's start with Charlotte. Charlotte, what did you think of the Suicide Squad?
So we'll briefly talk about the fact this is a sort of sequel, not really, to the Suicide Squad without the Suicide Squad.
Suicide Squad.
So some of the cast are familiar. You've got Viola Davis. You've got Margot Robbie. What's his name?
Jai
Joel
Courtney.
Kinnaman.
Yeah.
Jai Courtney. Oh yeah, Jai Courtney.
Amber as well. Yeah.
Making a reappearance. There's some new faces. In particular, the person I think really I loved, Sylvester Stallone as King Shark.
Yep.
And yes, he stole every scene he was in. But Idris Elba, I've never really quite got as an actor, but his I'm too old for this sugar routine that he does in this film is phenomenal. I really enjoyed his presence in this film. He really led it for me.
Yeah, I really felt like he was the glue that held everyone together, because, you know, a film like this is always going to be driven by its ensemble, but you know, Idris Elba really does feel like he's there kind of dragging everyone into the middle and making sure that everything kind of flows well.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. And I think because, especially at the start of the film, so James Gunn, the director of this, if you weren't aware, this is a James Gunn film, straight off the back of being kicked off of Guardians 3, then very swiftly returned back after Disney realised what they'd lost. And yeah, so it does feel very much like a trademark James Gunn film. Like, it has all the composite parts that you'd expect from something that he's put together. So you have like the incredibly graphic, gory violence. You have the quips. You have the wacky characters. You have the absolute color overload. In terms of his oeuvre, where would you guys rate this? Is this one of your favorites of his? Do you think he could have done better with this?
I don't think it maybe reaches the Guardians of the Galaxy height, but I will admit that it definitely challenges. It tries to get there, definitely. And it does a fairly good job of doing so. But yeah, not really as high as that.
There is a sequence involving Harley Quinn and is it Louis Prima's Just a Gigolo? I really enjoyed.
Yes. Yeah,
that scene, not to reveal much about it, but I thought that was a great use of music. That's the proper James Gunn. That's what I'm here for after Guardians of the Galaxy. I would say, though, it is a 15, but I'd argue it would should really be an 18 for the violence. Okay.
There is a lot of it.
That's really gross violence.
Gory violence. Yeah, I mean, King Shark literally rips a human being in half down the middle.
Yeah, and we should say that's not a spoiler. That is
in the trailer. Yes, and I mean, if you've seen that in the trailer, then it is that, but tenfold in the final cut of the movie. Yeah,
as I say, there are some very lingering shots of violence as well, even from the off. Without giving too much away, that opening sequence on the beach is just one thing after another of just really grisly, nasty deaths. I mean, I found myself quite enjoying that side of things. I'm a bit of a sucker for some really like grue nasty stuff, and yeah, that really tickled my more Neanderthal side, I'll be honest.
Well, it's funny, isn't it, because in the promotion leading up to the release of this film, there was a line that they used, and it was, don't get too attached. And obviously, you know, when you're going into the Suicide Squad, you know the shtick. You know that they're all disposable, you know, in that kind of sense. If you've read the comics, if you've seen Suicide Squad from 2016, that you know that that's just how it goes. But not quite expecting that. But they really do take that "don't get too attached" to a whole other level, really. And it's kind of signature James Gunn, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, you just knew that if he was going to do anything, he was going to do that. I mean, there is a moment that is literally at the beginning of that beach scene that I think I might have, like, cried from laughter. and I think you guys might know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But I just, yeah. And I feel like that's really set the tone for for the film.
I completely agree. I think there are some really just, it's as the trailer was very keen to point out, it's the beautifully twisted mind of James Gunn from which this has come. And yeah, that's all over this film. So we mentioned some of the characters there already, so King Shark and Bloodsport, and obviously the ones featured heavily in that synopsis. Did you guys feel that there was a good balance between the characters? Because with such a big ensemble, sometimes with these there is a risk of underbaking some parts. Did you feel like there was anything like that when you watched this? Charlotte, how did you feel about the balance of the characters?
I thought it was a pretty decent balance. I would say, though, in terms of recurring characters, I feel like we had a bit of a regression with Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn. I think she was so good in Birds of Prey. And this, it was less so. She kind of had less to do, but also her characterization just wasn't there. However, I would then counter it with her rapport with Rick Flag. I love, my favorite dynamic that I will, you know, I'm always here for is a duo where one of them is the optimist who's joyful and overwhelming, and the gnarled cynic. I'm here for that all the time, and I loved the two of them. They were great together.
No, I completely agree. That was, I think that was probably my main negative point of the film overall, is just that it, like you said, it feels like a bit of a regression from the phenomenal work that Cathy Yan, without mentioning her, did with Birds of Prey. And yeah, it just feels, you know, in certain things, it just does, it kind of misses and doesn't really feel like the Harley that we got to know in Birds of Prey.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, especially the second act where things are particularly focused on a plot point with Harley. Yeah, that really comes to the forefront, and it not only is a problematic being an easy word to use, but certainly a disappointing way of addressing her character, compared to, like we've said, the fantastic Birds of Prey film and Cathy Yan's excellent work with Margot Robbie on that film. But yeah, it just really slows the film down as well. And I just think, like, the more I think about that part, I just think, was that really necessary beyond kind of moving the parts around Corto Maltese and that island politics to get to the third act?
Yeah, I don't think it really was that necessary in all intents and purposes. And it did have an almost redemptive conclusion, but it just, yeah, it didn't really feel like it was needed at all. But I do have to say, going back to what you said, Simon, about the balance between characters, I did really think there was, and it felt like every character, whether they were on screen for 2 hours, you know, an hour, half an hour, 10 seconds, they all had their moment. And it's difficult to do, but it is something that James Gunn is so incredible at doing when it comes to these types of films, especially his adaptations of comic book movies. Do you know what I mean? He's just really, really good at making every character count.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, yeah, I mean, it's very easy just to descend into who was your favourite character with this, because there are so many big personalities on screen. And I think, for me, like, the personalities never clashed. There was a real cohesion and a lovely, like, even to a point, some really nice chemistry. Especially,
yeah,
oh yeah, like, between particularly Ratcatcher 2 and Bloodsport, so that's Daniela Melchior and Idris Elba's characters. They were so lovely, and I like it was again like there are some real like lovely character moments which don't necessarily help with the film's quite lengthy running time. But it was nice to have those moments where they're not always found, especially in these kind of, especially in like the big superhero genre films. Like you get that now and again, but certainly not often.
Yeah, very much so. I think also, we can't carry on talking about characters without mentioning David Dasmalchian's Polka Dot Man, who I thought was the, Barking Shark, my favourite character in the entire movie.
Yeah, the MVP absolutely for me as him. Well. Most valuable Polka Dot Man.
I just don't get it. Like the performance was just brilliant from all angles. If we're just gonna strip it down to what it is, he is literally playing a character that fires polka dots at people to kill. It's just out there. It's more out there than strange, isn't it? Like it is just how do you even get into the psyche of a character like that? But he just does it perfectly, and it's like we've known this character for so long, and he's been playing this character for as long as like Hugh Jackman was playing Wolverine or something. It just felt so lived in and so wonderful, and the comic moments were there, and also the really emotional moments were there. And there's obviously one thing that I don't want to spoil with his character that honestly I just laugh out loud moments throughout the last half of the film. Really, really, really good.
I'd agree with that, absolutely. Charlotte, how about yourself? Aside from kind of the big names we mentioned, was there anybody else that kind of crept into your heart, let's say?
I mean, Weasel was very watchable. But King Shark,
I thought he was a werewolf.
Yeah, that was a great sequence.
Such good.
But I think Sylvester Stallone was born to play King Shark. And I have a soft spot for King Shark from having read the comic books over the years and some of the like DC animated films in recent years. The fact there is a ship between him and Constantine, John Constantine, is just my favourite thing.
Oh my god, that sounds incredible.
That's the first I've heard of that, and I'm already
there's a reference in I think it's Justice League Dark Apocalypse Wars where John Constantine clocks his ex, and someone goes, "Oh, what Harley?" He went, "No," and it's King Shark.
Oh my word! Yep, yes, please, absolutely. My only real exposure to King Shark lately has been the Harley Quinn TV series.
Yes, which is amazing.
Nice.
Which is really good. If you haven't seen it already, I highly recommend it. It's so funny. Like, literally only, 20 to half an hour each episode. And, get on that train, because it's going places. One other person which we probably should bring up is John Cena as Peacemaker.
Of course, yes. Mm. Yeah.
So, how did you guys feel about his character and where that's going? Because without giving too much away, I mean, we know that there's a Peacemaker TV series coming, and suggestions that it might be a prequel. Obviously, not giving anything away with this film, but don't get too attached, being the tagline. How do you guys feel about that and his continuing role in what continues to insist on being called the DCEU?
Well, Charlotte's gone again. Wait for her to come back in.
Oh, gosh.
Charlotte, are you here?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm just staring at my screen. Okay. I don't know what it's doing or why it's doing that. Thank you for bearing with
me. That's so strange. Yeah, we'll have to, see.
Before we carry on, big shout out to Sam, who's going to have an absolute job.
Gosh. Don't worry, Sam. I will tell you ahead of time about this. No. Yeah, that's
about 7 minutes and 15 minutes.
Yeah, we'll have to work out what's going on with that.
We'll be fine. Life finds a way.
You were talking about Peacemaker, yes. John Cena. Well, I absolutely adored John Cena in this movie. I think his Film star trajectory has been a bit more wobbly than other particular wrestlers gone film stars, aka, you know, Dwayne Johnson, Dave Bautista.
Yeah.
You know, he's not necessarily been in some great movies, and even in the movies that he's in that are good, he's not necessarily been the best part about them. You know, he was in Trainwreck. And then he was in Bumblebee, of course, which was a great film, but
that
again,
right, yeah,
not exactly the strongest performance. But there's just something about John Cena and this character that just seemed to mesh together incredibly well. And I said this in a tweet actually earlier today, and I just, John Cena seems to be embracing pure lunacy at this point, and I'm like all here for it. Because, you know, he's been turning up to the press interviews and like the premiere dressed as Peacemaker. Like, who, what normal actor does that? Like, nobody. But he's just there, he's just having a great fun time, and you can tell how much fun he's having in this movie, because Peacemaker is just this really morally strange, just, yeah, weird character that is so utterly complex, really. Yeah. And John Cena just absolutely hits the nail on the head with everything. The comedy is there. You know, when it comes down to it, the more serious parts, it's just perfect. And coming into this, I was like, come on. If they're going to make a TV show spin-off of any of the characters from this film, why is it not King Shark? Why is it not Polka Dot Man? You know, what are we doing?
Yeah.
But now coming out of it, I'm actually a lot more intrigued and a lot more interested to see where it goes.
Yeah,
Alex, you missed
I
Blockers off your list.
Oh,
I think we Blockers. How good
not surprising.
Is in that film? I think that film is brilliant.
He's very good in that as well, yeah.
Especially
I'm
that kind of being so overprotective at such a cost. I think there's a nice line there between what he then does and the Suicide Squad.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you make a very fair point.
I see. And Charlotte, where do you stand on who seems to be DC's next big power player in terms of a character and actor, in fact?
Oh, what, with John Cena? I thought you were going to talk about the... There are two after-credit sequences for this film. I think we need to flag that. You
there
flag
are.
That for me.
Yes, so we should be... Yeah, as a nice little bit of public service broadcasting, if you are going to see Suicide Squad, and I think we're all agreed that that is a recommended go and watch, then yes, make sure, well, the first one you can't miss, it's literally on the title card, and the other one is right at the end. And shall we talk spoilery bits for a second, or shall we leave for people to discover?
I'm thinking I think, leave to discover it's
yeah,
still quite soon.
Probably at this point, yeah, because you know, yeah, it'll only just have come out in America as
that's
as
right
comes out,
yes.
So
we've been very lucky in the UK. We've had this out for a week now at time of release. In the US, you are getting to see this for the first time. So to quickly wrap up our thoughts on Suicide Squad, Charlotte, I'm going to go, let's not do stars, let's not do thumbs up, thumbs down. Let's do, would you recommend this film?
I would recommend this film if you like entertaining kind of gory action.
Nice. That's, yeah, perfect. And Alex, same question.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think that it'd be for all audiences, definitely not family audiences. but, you know, just in general, yeah, just give it a go. Give it a go. And especially compared to 2016 Suicide Squad, because, well, we don't talk about that.
Yes, it's by far a vast improvement on 2016's outing.
The bar is so low.
The bar is through the floor. Of course, there are a vast variety of opinions on this already. The film has certainly not been universally acclaimed, although there is a lot of positive vibes from critics already. But if you do want another opinion, I recommend checking out Leonie Horton's very, very well-argued review on the Jump Cut website. Definitely go and give that a look. You might not agree with it, but damn, it's well-written.
Yeah, I'd wholeheartedly agree with that. One of the best reviews I've read in a long time. It's good. Very good.
Nice. Okay, Well, from one big wrestler outfit to another, I'm going to try and combine these somehow. Well, as a little added review, we all managed actually to catch the other big release in the UK over the weekend of Disney's Jungle Cruise. So for those of you who aren't aware, this is based on the ride at Disneyland and Disney World, across the world, I think everyone has a Jungle Cruise. If not, why don't they?
Disneyland Paris doesn't.
Disneyland Paris doesn't?
It's a shame,
doesn't?
A crying shame.
Good Lord, Paris, get it together. but yes, so for those of you who have never been to Disneyland in America or Disney World, it's a ride where you go on a cruise through a jungle. I mean, simple as that, right? Well, the film had to complicate things a little bit further by adding a magic tree, Emily Blunt, Dwayne Johnson, Jack Whitehall, and a cast of others, including Paul Giamatti, doing a very, very broad Italian accent.
Although, Simon, I would have watched a full two-hour film of Dwayne Johnson just taking customers through his river cruise.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. so I'm aware that we are a little bit tight on time. So in some very brief thoughts, Charlotte, what did you take from Jungle Cruise? Would you ride again?
I think I'd watch parts of it again. Like if it was on telly, I'd put it on in the background. I thought Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Emily Blunt had really lovely chemistry, kind of throwback to Romancing the Stone and The African Queen for like duos on the water on adventures. But it wasn't as good as it could have been, I think was my takeaway.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. Like there were parts of it where I found myself really having a swashbuckling good time. But there were some moments which really fell flat. Alex, how did you come back from this? Are you a little bit warmer on it, or do you feel it should have been cast into the rapids whence it came?
I would say that I'm a lot warmer on it. Actually, on a second watch through, I bumped up my rating just a little bit more because I think I appreciated it just that bit more. But I don't know whether that was because I was watching it the second time around with friends and it was a nice, enjoyable experience in that sense. But yeah, no, I absolutely love it. I echo what Charlotte said about Dwayne Johnson and Emily Blunt having incredible chemistry. I think Dwayne Johnson can just deliver these types of performances in his sleep now. You know, he's been in two films that have been set in the jungle. No, sorry, three, technically. I feel like that's why audiences love him so much, because it's just such a welcoming, warming thing, and I love the kind of humor that was injected into it as well, especially with the puns and everything.
Oh yeah, I was a big fan of the puns.
Oh, I loved those
yeah
puns.
Very much so. Yeah, I just loved it. It was just, there's just so much nostalgia for films like The Mummy and Indiana Jones and National Treasure and Treasure Planet and all that kind of stuff. And it just made me feel like a kid again. And what more can you want from a film like this? It's, you know, a crowd pleaser in every sense of the word. And I just have to say, I thought Jack Whitehall was very good. I really enjoyed his performance. I thought he held up incredibly well against Dwayne Johnson and Emily Blunt. And Jesse Plemons. Round
Jesse
of applause.
Plemons doing
Jesse
his
Plemons.
Doing his best Werner Herzog impression.
Yeah, he always understands the assignment. So good. Yeah, I'd wholeheartedly recommend it.
Game night.
I think
so
it's all performed at the box office. Oh, yes. Oh my god, he's so good in that.
It's got to be really bad for Frito-Lay though.
but yeah. I think it's overperformed at the box office. It's done better than they thought it was going to. And I'm just so happy for that. You know, people properly getting back into the cinema and just having a cracking time.
Excellent. I mean, yeah, I'm somewhere between the two. I found myself enjoying it a lot at the time of it. It's definitely not a film which needs a lot of analytical thought, because otherwise it will just crumble, much like the petals, the very delicate petals that they're after. But no, I did find myself quite enjoying it. Weirdly, it made me want to go back and watch the first Pirates of the Caribbean film again, definitely in like the use of they were on location, I was just thinking, oh man, I just want to watch this film again. But that's no disrespect to Jungle Cruise. Like, I thought this was very good. And well, going back to DC, in fact, so Dwayne Johnson and the director of this film, Jean Colet-Serra, are going to be collaborating on Black Adam. That's their next big project together.
Cannot wait.
Yeah, I noticed that. It's going to be interesting, isn't it? Because he must have, because obviously they worked on Jungle Cruise together first, and Dwayne Johnson must have really loved the work that they put out. So yeah, it's going to be great, I think. It's got the scope.
Yeah, it's going to be epic in the classic sense of the word, I think. But, oh man. Well, yeah, I think I would say that's a recommend as well for Jungle Cruise. But yeah, I mean, Charlotte, I there were some lukewarm thoughts, but do you think people should go give it a go?
I think it is really charming. I think particularly summer holidays, it's a film that, the cliche, but like, kids will enjoy it, adults will enjoy it, puns. It's good enough reason to see it.
And a very friendly Jaguar.
Oh, I fell in love with Proxima so much. Oh. I love her. Love Proxima.
Love yeah. Proxima. Love big cats. Big fan. Yes. Okay. Well, this concludes the review section. And just one last little thing. So last week, you may remember we asked your thoughts on what should be our first entry on the Jumpcast Film Club to clear up those not quite shameful, but certainly personally embarrassing little gaps in our film knowledge. So we left it to the Twitter poll and the results are in. And without meaning to gloat, guys, you know, I mean, they're all great choices, but one had to be the best.
All right, don't get off your high horse. Come on, give it.
Well, I'm feeling a bit dizzy on this high horse. See what I did there?
You picked the best film you hadn't seen. Yeah.
I picked the best film I hadn't seen. I started big, and sure enough, so the first film we're going to be covering as part of the Jumpcast Film Club is Alfred Hitchcock's 1958. Apparent classic, I'll find out for myself, one point, Vertigo. We are going to be covering that in the podcast coming out in a few weeks' time. So if you want to join in, get in on the discussion. We're going to be covering that on the podcast in a few weeks' time, I believe. Mr. Schedulman?
Yeah, we'll be talking about it on the 27th of August and setting up the new... the film club for the next month on that date as well.
Excellent. So
if people want to get in touch with us, it's 24th, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So send in your thoughts, views, reviews. We'll read them out on the podcast by the 24th of August. The best ones will make it on. Actually, that's harsh. Well, they probably will, to be honest. This ain't a democracy. So. But if you want to check it out yourself, if you haven't seen it yourself, or if you want to revisit it, it's on SkyGo or Now TV, or Now, I guess, as the kids are calling it these days, or it's on Jeff Bezos's Garden of Earthly Delights for $2.49. So that is it. Or find it in any of your good physical media shops, because, hey, support physical media, support small businesses. Anyway, that is that in terms of the main bullet points for this week. Guys, it's been fantastic. We've got through episode one proper. Where are we off to next? What are we looking forward to in the upcoming release window?
Still says The Green Knight on the release schedule.
Oh, that's triggering.
The Green Knight and now Clifford the Big Red Dog.
A solitary tear just came out.
Oh no. We should say as well, from last week, because of Alex's excitement and enthusiasm for Clifford the Big Red Dog, we should have a moment of respect for the indefinite pulling.
So just going down the drain again, isn't it? God damn it.
We'll make our own films, damn it.
We'll make our own Clifford the Big Red Dog.
Oh my god. But well, we know for a fact that, well, god for, you know, god willing, the cinema gods willing, that Zola definitely is coming out next week, among other films. So we will almost certainly be covering that in our next podcast. Speak now, Charlotte and Alex, or forever hold your peace until the next week.
I'll continue to hold my peace.
I think we should cover so obviously Zola will probably be our big review of next week, but the minor review should be Paw Patrol the movie.
Paw Patrol the movie,
oh,
and
no,
Vivo, Lin-Manuel Miranda's Netflix movie.
Ah, of course, yes, Vivo. Actually, that'll be better. Yeah, we'll go with that instead.
The summer's here,
still
everyone. And Stillwater.
Oh, yeah, it's still... When does Stillwater... Oh, yeah, it does. Yeah,
I think it's Friday, and there's one other release. So Stillwater, Zola,
Oh, and The Last Letter from Your Lover.
Yes, that was
That's the one.
That's the one, which is a very, very clumsy title. And, well, we'll have to see if the execution is any better. But until then, thank you so much for listening. As always, check out the reviews of all these films and more on the Jump Cut website. I've been Simon Whitlock.
I have been Alex Gilston.
And I continue to be Charlotte Harrison.
Excellent. We'll catch you next week. But until then, guys, have a lovely week. Enjoy your films. And we'll see you soon.